I'm Heather.
And I'm Susan.
Come along with us on an adventure in the Book of Judges.
Welcome to the club, the Bible Book Club.
Last episode, chapters 13 and 14, we discussed the last three minor judges. And then we read the last of the phrases, "Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord," which introduced us to the final major and most famous judge, Samson. Samson's birth was announced to his parents by the angel of the Lord. So we're expecting a lot from Samson. But yeah. Right from the beginning, Samson's obsession with women surfaces. And rather than focusing on saving Israel from the Philistines, he marries one. His parents are not happy, but Samson wants what he wants, and he demands it. So the wedding proceeds, and he is assigned 30 Philistine companions. The men are not going to be his friends.
No. Okay, this is where Samson's cycle of revenge and retaliation begins building from chapter 14, where, remember, Samson baited his new Philistine frenemies by trying to fleece them with the lion riddle. The Philistines threatened to burn Samson's wife if she didn't get the answer to the riddle. So Samson's wife manipulated Samson into giving her the answer to the riddle. Samson lost the bet and got angry with the Philistines and his wife. So he left her to return to his parents' house for how long, we don't know. The wife's father assumed, because Samson was gone for so long, that he didn't want her anymore and gave her to one of Samson's new Philistine frenemies. And this is the story of what happened when Samson found out. Scene 1, Samson's fury burns, chapter 15.
Later on, at the time of the wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat and went to visit his wife. He said, "I'm going to my wife's room," but her father would not let him go in. "I was so sure you hated her," he said, "that I gave her to your companion. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead," Samson said to them. "This time, I have a right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them." So he went out and caught 300 foxes and tied them tail to tail in pairs. He then fastened a torch to every pair of the tails, lit the torches, and let the foxes loose in the standing grain of the Philistines. He burned up the shocks and standing grain together in the vineyards and olive groves. When the Philistines asked, "Who did this?" they were told, "Samson the Timnite's son-in-law, because his wife was given to his companion." So the Philistines went up and burned her and her father to death. Samson said to them, "Since you have acted like this, I swear that I won't stop until I get my revenge on you." He attacked them viciously and slaughtered many of them. Then he went down and stayed in a cave in the rock of Etam.
Samson returns for his wife and found that she was with somebody else, and he is furious. He burns 300 foxes. The foxes burn the crops. The Philistines burn Samson's wife and father-in-law. The cycle of revenge and retaliation escalates with human trafficking and animal cruelty. The Philistine father is trafficking his daughters. They are pawns for profit, and he offers them to anyone who will pay. He even offers the younger daughter in replace for the other daughter. It's just so sick. Samson's anger has turned to rage and feeds on cruelty in this case, animal cruelty. His goal is to make the Philistines pay by destroying their crops, but his method tortures 300 foxes in the process. The Philistines retaliate by burning his wife and her father, their own people. Remember, she was a Philistine. Then Samson straight up starts single-handedly slaughtering the Philistines, which of course was God's goal. How far we have fallen in our story of the 12 judges of Israel. There is not one mention of Samson doing any of this for the Lord or to deliver God's people from the oppression of the Philistines. Samson's only motivation is to feed his own impulses. He is driven by his feelings, physical desire, emotional rage, and mental manipulation. What Samson feels becomes his truth. He has lost sight of God. And that is the point. Samson, the final judge of Israel, is as bad, if not worse, than the Canaanites.
Is there anything in the commentaries about how old Samson is? Because it's very immature behavior.
He's still young. Again, he goes back to his parents, but this is the point with Samson. He never really matures. Mm-hmm. He's very impulsive and
hot-headed.
Yeah, and he just wants what he wants all the time. All right, scene two. The Philistine threat becomes national. The Philistines are now on a warpath to rid themselves of this Israelite nuisance named Samson. They want him dead, and they threaten Judah to give him up, because remember, he's hiding now. This is Judah's chance as the lead tribe to step up. They were a powerful tribe and could have redirected Samson to God and used Samson as a judge to lead them to victory against the Philistines. But Judah is afraid. They capitulate to the threat instead of seizing the opportunity to execute God's command to conquer and possess the promised land.
Verse 9, the Philistines went up and camped in Judah, spreading out near Lai. The people of Judah asked, "Why have you come to fight us?" "We have come to take Samson prisoner," they asked, "to do to him as he did to us." Then 3,000 men from Judah went down to the cave in the rock of Etam and said to Samson, "Don't you realize that the Philistines are rulers over us? What have you done to us?" He answered, "I merely did to them what they did to me." They said to him, "We've come to tie you up and hand you over to the Philistines." Samson said, "Swear to me that you won't kill me yourselves." "Agreed," they answered. "We will only tie you up and hand you over to them. We will not kill you." So they bound him with two new ropes and led him up from the rock. As he approached Lai, the Philistines came toward him shouting. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. The ropes on his arms became like charred flax, and the bindings dropped from his hands. Finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, he grabbed it and struck down 1,000 men. Then Samson said, "With a donkey's jawbone, I have made donkeys of them. With a donkey's jawbone, I have killed 1,000 men." When he finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone, and the place was called Ramath Lehi.
So here's the sad thing. Had Samson all this time been acting as a leader, maybe Judah would have recognized him as a leader. But he didn't look like one, and so they were kind of ready to hand him over versus trying to go against the Philistines. So Samson is still on his own without any tribe backing him, and he achieves his greatest victory simply because the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. He achieved God's purpose, but his motive was wrong. Another judge had a similar victory, but with a pure motive. Shamgar, remember, struck down 600 Philistines with an ox goad. But Shamgar's motive was to aid Israel, while Samson's motive was personal revenge. We know this because, of course, Samson then sings a song about himself. Samson uses God's power, but never gives God the glory. Compared to Deborah's song, where God got all the credit, this is another sad reminder of how far our judges have fallen. Yet with all of Samson's faults and a heart that is untrue to God, God continues to show this judge mercy and grace.
Verse 18, because he was very thirsty, he cried out to the Lord, "You have given your servant this great victory, but must I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" Then God opened up the hollow place in Lehi, and water came out of it. When Samson drank, his strength returned, and he revived. So the spring was called En Hakor, and it is still there in Lehi. Samson led Israel for 20 years in the days of the Philistines.
Samson, such a slave to his impulses, cannot even control his thirst without whining about it. To God of all people.
And he only cries out to God when it's yeah, exactly, because he's thirsty and not for anything else.
Yeah, it's all about him. He is so like the Israelites, wandering and whining in the wilderness in season two of Bible Book Club, I Can't Stand It. The OG Israelites grumbled and God delivered water from a rock in Exodus 17 and in Numbers 20. Is Samson just a chip off the old Israelites' rock? Could it be that there is hope for our judge? Perhaps there is a little of Israel left in him. Chapter 16, scene 3. Samson's second obsession is a prostitute. So Samson's first obsession was the Philistine woman he married. That marriage did not end well, but Samson still lusts, and it doesn't seem that he struggles to control it at all. He satisfies his desires with a prostitute. Next.
Chapter 16. One day, Samson went to Gaza, where he saw a prostitute. He went in to spend the night with her. The people of Gaza were told, "Samson is here." So they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the city gate. They made no move during the night, saying, "At dawn, we'll kill him." But Samson lay there only until the middle of the night. Then he got up and took hold of the doors of the city gate together with the two posts and tore them loose, bar and all. He lifted them to his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron.
The guy is like, he's
very
like Hulk.
Strong.
He's like Hulk.
Very strong.
When he gets mad, the power comes upon him. So Gaza was one of the chief cities of the Philistines. What is he doing there? Samson courts danger like he courts women impulsively. Like, did you have to go find a prostitute in Gaza of all places? To make the situation even more dangerous, Samson decides to spend the night in Gaza. Of course, he escapes, humiliating the people of Gaza in the process by mocking their inability to contain him and their not-so-invincible city gate. The result is that the Gazites become obsessed with stealing the secret to Samson's strength. Samson's obsession with women, combined with this arrogant confidence in what he perceives to be his own strength, make him recklessly foolish. His preoccupation with himself will be his downfall. Scene 4, Samson's third obsession is Delilah. This woman will be different, more than just an obsession. This woman has a name, and Samson has fallen in love.
Verse 4. Sometime later, he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, "See if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength and how we can overpower him so we may tie him up and subdue him. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver."
Samson is once again distracted by a woman. At the end of chapter 15, it said that he was leading Israel at the time. It appears he is doing it solo. There is no mention of an army like Othniel or Jehud, no collaboration with others like Deborah and Barak. Samson is always alone, unless he is with a woman.
And it seems like the Philistines also know that. They know that's one weakness of his because they're always trying to exploit it.
Exactly. In Gaza and here. What Samson needs is corporate worship, a community to keep him straight.
Well, don't we all?
Exactly. This time, we have a name for this woman. Her name is Delilah. It is believed that she also was a Philistine. If so, this would be the third woman from the wrong camp. We don't know much about Delilah, but she is interesting. She is not a prostitute, as the woman in Gaza, but she must not be wife material either, or else they probably would have married. Now, neither her father nor a husband is mentioned, yet she seems to have her own house. She is clearly a woman who values financial security over romantic pleasure. She may have had some kind of social standing, because rather than threaten her life, as the Philistine rulers had done to Samson's wife, they bribe her with an absurdly high amount for the time. With this woman, Samson has overreached. Delilah has the upper hand from the start, because unlike Samson, she is not at all controlled by her desires. While Samson whiles away the days with only one thing in mind, physical and emotional gratification, Delilah is playing a game and covertly plotting to profit from her boy toy. It will take her just 4 moves to win this hand. Delilah makes her first move. This is how I imagine this went down. The couple has just retired and made love, and Samson, a slave to self-gratification, is satisfied and just wants to sleep. But Delilah wants to talk. And he knows she can talk and talk. And he knows there is but one way to get what he wants now, and it's to give her what she wants so he can go to sleep. She is a very smart woman. She knows when to make a move.
Verse 6. So Delilah said to Samson, "Tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied up and be subdued." Samson said to her, "If anyone ties me with 7 fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, I'll become as weak as any other man." Then the rulers of the Philistines brought her 7 fresh bowstrings that had not been dried, and she tied him with them. With men hidden in the room, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the bowstrings as easily as a piece of string snaps when it comes close to a flame. So the secret of his strength was not discovered.
After this scene, Samson had to be fully aware of the game that Delilah was playing. Did he think it was cute? Was it entertaining to him? He knows that she is not just toying with him. There were Philistines hiding in the house. But Samson likes to play with danger, and he really likes playing with Delilah. So he stays with her to play the game. Here's Delilah's second move.
Verse 10. Then Delilah said to Samson, "You have made a fool of me. You lied to me. Come now. Tell me how you can be tied." And he said, "If anyone ties me securely with new ropes that have never been used, I'll become as weak as any other man." So Delilah took new ropes and tied him with them. Then, with the men hidden in the room, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the ropes off his arms as if they were threads.
Okay, did Samson just laugh out loud? Did it make Delilah mad? Did he just then shoo the Philistines out the door and climb back into bed with her like, "Come on, babe, let's get some sleep. No more games tonight. I'm tired." What does this say about his ego that he doesn't seem to care that the woman he loves is conspiring against him with his enemy?
Yeah, because he's so hot-headed, you would think it would just really make him mad.
It's because this is a woman. He just thinks it's cute or something. But the funny thing is, like I said, he's overreached with her. Delilah is not deterred. She knows how to wear this man down. So she tries again with a third attempt to trap Samson.
Verse 13. Delilah then said to Samson, "All this time you've been making a fool of me and lying to me. Tell me how you can be tied." He replied, "If you weave the 7 braids of my head into the fabric on the loom and tighten it with the pin, I'll become as weak as any other man." So while he was sleeping, Delilah took the 7 braids of his head, wove them into the fabric, and tightened it with the pin. Again, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He woke from his sleep and pulled up the pin and the loom with the fabric.
Okay, in my head, same scene is playing out here. I don't think Samson even cares that the Philistines may be watching.
He still thinks it's funny.
He's satisfied. He is sexually satisfied, and he is so sleepy and satisfied that his brain is running out of creative ways to capture himself, because he, in this instance, dances closer to the truth. Like, he's so tired, he's just getting closer to the truth. His hair, the one aspect of his Nazirite vow he has not broken. Samson is getting lazy, and Samson thinks he is invincible, but he has met his match. She is shrewd and he is foolish. She is intentional and he is impulsive. She is persistent and Samson capitulates.
Verse 15, then she said to him, "How can you say I love you when you won't confide in me? This is the third time you've made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your great strength." With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was sick to death of it. So he told her everything. "No razor has ever been used on my head," he said, "because I have been a Nazirite dedicated to God from my mother's womb. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me and I would become as weak as any other man." When Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, "Come back once more. He has told me everything." So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands. After putting him to sleep on her lap, she called for someone to shave off the 7 braids of his hair and so began to subdue him, and his strength left him. Then she called, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He woke from his sleep and thought, "I'll go out as before and shake myself free." But he did not know that the Lord had left him.
So Delilah finally produces a winning hand. And again, my opinion only, she probably won with a combination of two cards. The emotional, you don't love me card, and with the physical, therefore we're not having sex card. And after days of too much talk and not enough of what Samson really wanted, he was sick to death of it. So Samson laid down his only card, the secret to his strength. Game over. Delilah won the money, the Philistines won Samson, and Samson lost more than his strength. The Lord left him. What was Samson thinking? He says, I will go out as before. Did he really never consider that he could lose his power? How could he so easily dismiss the Nazirite vow to the Lord? Because Samson had irreverently been breaking his vow to the Lord for years by touching dead bodies. And he hadn't lost his strength then, so he probably thought he never would. In his mind, it was his strength, not a gift from the Lord. We cannot begin to understand why God wrote this story this way. But as the author of creation and the master of the plan, he did. We must accept that God's choices don't always line up with our desires. Surely, this is what Samson pondered most in prison. For what seems for the first time in his life, Samson cannot win in his own strength, because it was not ever his strength. It was God's, and Samson took it for granted. Samson missed a truth that we must grasp. While God can work through our lives, even when we are not obeying his word, we cannot assume that he will. All right, moving on to scene 5, Samson gets a shot at redemption.
Verse 21, then the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Gaza. Binding him with bronze shackles, they set him to grinding grain in the prison.
Samson was taken to Gaza, where he had humiliated the town by tearing down their gate in the scene with his second obsession, the prostitute. In retaliation, Gaza takes this opportunity to make Samson a public spectacle because he had made them a public spectacle. The mighty Samson is reduced beyond anything he could have ever imagined. For years, he had abused the gift of power God had given him by defiantly breaking his Nazirite vow all by himself. But to give the secret power to the Philistines was the last straw for God. With the Lord's power gone, Samson is blinded and imprisoned. Out of all the methods the Philistines could have used to torment Samson, it seems providential that they opted to blind him. It guaranteed that Samson would never again be enticed by the sight of a woman. Because when Samson could see women, he was blind to God. But when Samson was blind to women, he finally saw God.
Verse 22, but the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved.
Hope is on the horizon for Samson because God is at work in tandem with his hair. We don't understand this. We can only hope that his faith is growing too. Meanwhile, the next scene takes place in the temple of the false god Dagon.
Verse 23, now the rulers of the Philistines assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to celebrate, saying, our God has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hands. When the people saw him, they praised their god, saying, our God has delivered our enemy into our hands, the one who laid waste our land and multiplied our slain.
Ugh, the Philistines declare that their God has delivered their enemy Samson into their hands. This brings us back to the whole point of this story. The battle was never supposed to be about Samson. It was supposed to be about the God of the Israelites. And had Samson been like Othniel, the result would have been totally different. Israel would have been celebrating God for delivering the Philistines. And all the other lands would have heard about it. God's name would have been glorified among the nations. People would have believed in the one true God. Instead, the Philistines are praising Dagon and ridiculing God. The question is, Does Samson see his mistake now that he is blind to women?
Verse 25, while they were in high spirits, they shouted, "Bring out Samson to entertain us." So they called Samson out of the prison and he performed for them. When they stood him among the pillars, Samson said to the servant who held his hand, "Put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple so that I may lean against them." Now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of the Philistines were there, and on the roof were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. Then Samson prayed to the Lord, "Sovereign Lord, remember me. Please, God, strengthen me just once more, and let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes." Then Samson reached toward the two central pillars on which the temple stood, bracing himself against them, his right hand on the one and his left hand on the other. Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." Then he pushed with all his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than while he lived. Then his brothers and his father's whole family went down to get him. They brought him back and buried him between Zorah and Eshtol in the tomb of Manoah, his father. He had led Israel 20 years.
So Samson has had a lot of time to ponder in prison, and he has become a plaything to the Philistines. He knows there is not much left he can do for the Lord. He has blown his chance. And finally, Samson prays and cries out to the Lord. Some commentators think this is another self-serving act of revenge because Samson says it is for his eyes. Yet others believe that in Samson's prayer, there is humility and an exercise of faith. Hebrews 11:32 includes him in the hall of faith and says this,
"And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah, about David and Samuel the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies."
So Samson's weakness was definitely turned to strength, and God honors his final act with superhuman strength. And in the end, it was Samson's blindness that saved him from his obsession. God closed his eyes to temptation, and it opened his eyes to see God's purpose for him. God gave him one more chance to fulfill his purpose. Samson is the final judge in this book. His purpose was to deliver Israel from the oppression of the Philistines. And while he killed thousands, his delivery was far from complete and feels anything but victorious. Samson's story leaves us with only one conclusion. There has to be more. The Israelites needed more. We need more. We need deliverance from our enemies. We need respite from oppression. We need a way out of the cycle of sin. We need a judge, a king, a savior. Ahead of us are two episodes of the darkest days in Israel's Old Testament history. It was not easy for me to research, and it won't be easy to listen to. But I promise that season 8 is around the corner, and it will be a joy, because Ruth and Boaz are more devoted to God than Samson was to women. And together, God will use these two to play a special role in the hope for a king and a savior.
What's a club without friends? If you're enjoying the Bible Book Club, why don't you share it? And then you can say,
Welcome to the club.
New episodes drop every Monday, and get all episodes now on Amazon Music. As always, head over to susanmee.com/Bible Book Club for show notes from today's episode. Bible Book Club is hosted by Susan Merrill and Heather Rubio, edited by Buck Buchanan, produced by Haley Mawat.